Your workday may be done, but we're not.
This is The Six
on Nashville's best sports talk,
ESPN
102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
And The Game Nashville app.
Welcome into The Six here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Wednesday night, July 6, 2022. My name is Max Erz, and I'm going to take you on a drive through Interview City on this Wednesday night. Four different interviews coming your way in the next hour. We'll talk baseball with Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja, to get the show started momentarily. Then Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio joins us a little bit after 6:15. Around 6:35, one of our producers here at 102.5 The Game will join us. But he's not just a producer. He's former Vanderbilt and Alabama national champion long snapper Scott Meyer, who was in training camp with the Arizona Cardinals earlier this summer. And then to finish it up, my buddy Drew Carter from ESPN and the ACC Network, who has been announcing the Premier Lacrosse League, which has been traveling the country this summer and really gaining storm as a major pro league. So we'll go around the sports world. We're going to have some fun in this hour over the next few weeknights here on 102.5 The Game. And we will start with one of the most fun, most innovative, influential minds in all of baseball. And he doesn't play. He doesn't coach. He tweets and he cuts video. His name's Rob Friedman. He's the pitching ninja. And if you're a baseball fan with a Twitter account, you know him really, really well. He loves Vanderbilt baseball. So we'll talk with him about two of his favorites, Kamar Rocker and Jack Leiter from the Vandy boys, who have moved on to pro ball. Rocker will be trying to do so again in the draft this year, of course, but Jack Leiter in the Rangers organization. Rocker also taken in the first round last year. Didn't sign with the Mets. He'll be back in the draft in a couple of weeks, and we think things will go better this time, and Kamar Rocker will really be able to get it going. But Rob Friedman is our guest. Strap in. We got a fun hour coming your way here on 102.5 The Game. Rob, great to have you on. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Max. Anytime.
It is a fun time of baseball right now. We are pretty much at the halfway point of the MLB season. All-Star Game coming up in a couple weeks. MLB Draft now in a part of the calendar where it's really supposed to be, with the All-Star Game is coming up as well. Always fun to talk Vandy baseball with you. I know you love the Vandy boys as much as really any college team other than Georgia Tech, where your son played, so we'll excuse you for them being first. But let's talk some Vandy boys baseball. What did you think about Vandy, especially from a pitching perspective, this season in year one without Rocker and Leiter, when the staff was a little bit in flux and still kind of in development, even into the playoffs?
Yeah, you know, I got to say it was definitely a down year for Vandy pitching, at least. And I guess it showed how important Leiter and Rocker were, if you've ever had any doubt. This year was a great example of how much those guys meant to the program.
I know Kamar Rocker is arguably your favorite, at least amateur pitcher of all time. Is that fair to say?
I think it is fair to say. Yeah. I mean, he had so many big moments.
And the first big moment that you did such a great job documenting was in the middle of the playoff no-hitter his freshman year against Duke, 2019, the elimination game. The worst rule in college baseball, the offensive timeout called by Duke and Coach Pollard to try and slow him down. And you just got the best video of TV going back to him, the coach and the batter standing in the on-deck circle. Was that the moment that you fell in love?
You know what? So this is a long thing with Kumar. Is we faced him back when he was 10
oh,
in Cooperstown.
Wow.
So I saw what a dog that dude was then as a 10-year-old. Like, they're, you know, parents, because he's a giant kid. So parents think that they could, you know, talk crap to a 10-year-old. And he stood there. He was bigger than everybody, threw harder than everybody. And I love the way he handled it. Like, I was always curious to see how he would end up. And obviously my son and me coaching on the, you know, the travel ball circuit down here at East Cobb, you saw a lot of Kumar. And I just knew that the kid had a great makeup. And that was just the icing on the cake for me to show everybody else what that kid was made of.
We're talking to Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja, one of the best baseball Twitter follows out there. I think that point with Kamar, when you first saw him for the first time, if he was 10, that was when they lived in Nashville too, when his dad was coaching D-line for the Titans. So You saw Nashville Kamar for a little bit there.
That's right. Before he was cool. I'm an old school Kamar fan.
You and I were talking leading up to this interview about Kamar and the pitch that's made him famous, the McNasty, as he once called it, or as his parents called it when he was in high school. That's this downer slider. All 19 strikeouts in that no-hitter in 2019 against Duke. Tons of strikeouts going forward. He throws it out of the zone. He throws it in the zone. He gets swings and misses with it all over the place. He gets some called strikes, too. What is so unique about that pitch that took him as far as it did?
I really think it's kind of the two-plane movement of the pitch and how it tracks really well with his fastball. I mean, he obviously throws hard. He's a big kid. But he wasn't necessarily known, even though he threw hard, he wasn't known as having an unhittable fastball. And what that slider did is, number one, it's unhittable in and of itself. It stays in plane with his fastball really well and then dives like a splitter, kind of. But the other thing that made his fastball that much better, because you had to protect against that. So when you have an upper 90s fastball to protect against and you have that slider, that's kind of all you need when you're that dude in college. Like, he can dominate a lineup.
Do you think he could pitch in the majors this season if everything goes well with the redraft and things like that? Maybe some relief?
He could. I think teams will take it slower with him. That's my instinct. But I don't put anything past that dude. Like, he is proven to be, like, one of the best competitors in college baseball history. And that's the thing that I want everyone to take away. Like, he's physically really talented. But his mental makeup and his competitiveness, you want him on your team.
Cosign. Rob Friedman's the pitching ninja. He's with us here on 102.5 The Game. We talked the good of Kamar and then some of the bad that he's had to deal with over the last year since getting drafted by the Mets 10th overall last summer out of Vandy. The Mets chose not to sign him because of something small they found on his medicals. The draft system basically gives teams an out to get a free identical pick next year if they don't sign somebody. What did you think through all of that? Obviously, a very unfair experience for the player. The system was not collectively bargained in any way with amateur players involved. Just a terrible situation, and now he's come back to indie ball, and he's ready to go back in the draft again.
I hated it. Like, to me, that if any kid deserved good things to have happen to him, it was a guy who answered the call every single time you needed him at Vanderbilt, like every single time. Pitched his butt off every game, showed his heart every game, and then you treat him like that. You know, I don't know the details of the medicals that well, but I think it was more gamesmanship and, you know, people negotiating on his behalf, him, you know, and the team just trying to make a point. And I thought that it stinks to see him caught in the middle of it, a kid who does nothing but compete. And
yeah,
I just wanted to see him on the field. I actually DM'd him after that and said, prove them wrong.
Yes.
I just want to see him go out there with even a bigger chip on his shoulder and, you know, show what he's made of, because he's perfectly capable of dominating a major league lineup.
Yeah, you're one of many. Rob Friedman, pitching ninja, talking about Kamar Rocker here on 102.5 The Game. So he pitched an indie ball for the Tri-City Valley Cats in New York. Handful of outings. Seems to have pitched really well. Do you think he'll go top 20? Is there a chance somebody takes him around where he went the first time?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I don't see any reason he should drop. I mean, if you look at the college pitchers this year, you know, I just don't see it, but you never know. I mean, I think teams are going to try to find the best bargain they can. And if he, you know, if for some reason people pass just because they're nervous, yeah, I guess he could drop even further, but I would hate to see that. Like, if it's my team, I'm picking him.
Yep, yep. And there are definitely some teams that are in good shape right now and don't need a surefire prospect at the moment. They could maybe take a little bit of a risk if there is still any medical concern and go right after him. So, all right, always great talking to Kamar Rocker. Let's talk Jack Leiter now, another one of your favorites from Vandy. This dude showed up, obviously son of a great big league pitcher. Showed up at Vandy in the fall of 2019, basically with five pitches, like, ready to go. I mean, could you believe how good he was right off the bat? Like, this guy is a pro. He is a pro.
I did not believe it, nor did I have those expectations from him. I mean, I knew his last name. I'd seen him pitch in high school. I knew he can dominate a high school lineup. I didn't expect him to hit the ground running like he did and improve. Like, getting in the Vandy system just supercharged him. His makeup is, you know, he's got a different type of dog in him than Kumar does. Like, Jack is more of the quiet assassin.
Yep.
He's very cerebral on the mound. And you wouldn't think he throws gas, but he does, because his legs are the size of trees. but I did not expect that from him. And I was unbelievably impressed by his poise and composure on the mound.
You had a gif from early in the 2021 season of Jack Leiter, and I'm blanking on what movie it was, but it was an old school disaster movie. And yep. there was an avalanche or a flood coming into Times Square, and Jack Leiter was just on the mound waiting for the avalanche to get back in the box to throw the next pitch. One of the best things
Absolutely.
You've ever
done. It was one of my favorites because it summed up what I thought about him. Like, players are stepping out, coaches are trying to get in his head, and the kid wouldn't step off the rubber. I think he influenced the next generation of college pitchers to not step off in those situations. Usually you're stepping off. You know, if somebody's taking a while to get in the box, he just said, I'm ready. As soon as you get in the box, I am going to shove this ball down your throat. Without being flat, like, totally unflappable dude. And he wasn't trying to make a point. He was just laser focused. And that shows the next level mental game stuff that he has, thanks to his dad. Like, his dad was a big mental game, Harvey Dorfman guy. And it's just instilled in him to be that guy.
The movie, by the way, was Deep Impact, 98, Steven Spielberg.
Exactly right. Yep.
So an amazing gif. I don't know what the exact way is to go back and search it, but if you go on Twitter and search From Pitching Ninja and type in the name of any pitcher you like, you will find amazing stuff. So do it with Jack Leiter first. So that's a good place to start right there. But I think my favorite Jack Leiter quote of all time was when he was in kindergarten. On his first day at a new school, he went around and asked all the other kids in the class what major league team their dad played for, because he thought everyone's dad was in the majors.
That's hilarious.
So I think that sums up the Leiter legacy very well right there. So two of Vandy's favorites and two of Rob Friedman's favorites. Let's go around the bigs a little bit with the pitching ninja. We're in Braves country here in Nashville, and I know you had Spencer Strider on your YouTube interview show recently, Rob. So everyone go to the Pitching Ninja channel. If you're a Braves fan, watch that interview with Spencer Strider. The mustache is great, but more importantly, this guy's stuff plus, whether you just watch it or you use actual stuff plus, like the real numerical measurement of it, he is basically a closer who starts. Like, it's crazy, right?
It's crazy. Like, he is number one, another one of those guys, like I mentioned with Leiter and Rocker, a young dude who's got his mind absolutely together. Like, he knows what he wants to be, borrows things from other pitchers, extremely sharp, and throws a living piss out of the baseball. I mean, you're talking about, he threw the fastest pitch ever by a starting pitcher at 102.4 miles an hour this year. Like, in the last, since 2008, since they've been tracking velocity, that's how hard this dude throws. And he's only like 5'11". Like, he's incredibly talented and just has a flair for the game that makes you want to watch him.
And he's also been in the majors for, 3 months?
Yeah. Yeah, pretty much.
That'll be a fun career to watch. I mean, we know a lot of great Braves pitchers have had multiple roles. Smoltz comes to mind, obviously. But this is a guy who's going to do everything for them. And like pretty much everyone on the Braves right now, he's having a career year. And for him, it's his first year. But it feels like everybody
absolutely
on that team's having their best season ever.
Yeah, and the thing about, like, just pure electricity, you're exactly right. He's like a closer pitching, you know, 6 and 7 innings a game. It's like you're watching Craig Kimbrell or Billy Wagner out there in their primes throwing. And it's just, people should they should make sure to watch. And he should be, like, he's my rookie of the year right now. Like, that dude is insanely talented.
Hey, give the NL to whoever you want. My AL is going to my boy Jeremy Pena. So you hand out the NL to whoever you want. But
we're
giving it to a hitter. I'm sorry for doing that for you. But Jeremy Pena is my boy, and he's killing it.
Something.
So, yeah. Last question for Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja, here on 102.5 The Game. My Cy Young picks right now, Sandy Alcantara in the NL, Shane McClanahan in the AL. I got them both going down to Florida. Do you agree with me? I know you love both those dudes.
Without a doubt, I agree with you. I think Sandy, the amount of innings he throws, having that dominant stuff, holding his velo late in games, he is a horse on the mound. And, you know, I'm just a huge fan of his stuff and his makeup, too, because he's pretty calm dude. And then Shane McClanahan's a little different in that he's crazy electric. I mean, he's got a pitch arsenal that other pitchers would die for. I mean, even his changeup, which is relatively new for him, is unhittable. Like, it's one of the best changeups in the major leagues among starting pitchers. And he's got a curveball, slider, you know, fastball. He, you know, they touches 100 miles an hour with. If you're not paying attention to these guys, you should be.
What is Alcantara doing differently than every other pitcher on the planet right now to go so deep?
He's a big dude, big, strong dude. He's gotten bigger, so he's taking care of himself. And his command has stepped up a notch. And when you're throwing 101 with some wicked arm side run, a changeup that's like 94 miles an hour, and then mixing in a slider and a four-seamer, he just makes the game look simple. I mean, he goes at hitters. He doesn't waste pitches. And he holds something back for the end and when he needs it. So he's an old-school pitcher in a new-school game. And, you know, I think he would be your favorite pitcher's favorite pitcher.
I love that. And for the first time this year, and I think it has helped him, he's got Nashville's own Jake Stallings behind the plate stealing strikes for him on all four sides of the zone. So I think that's
absolutely
big, too.
Yep, totally.
But we got to give a shout-out to Jay Stahl, Nashville guy. So Rob Friedman, the Pitching Ninja. If you don't follow him, you either don't have a Twitter or don't like baseball. But follow Pitching Ninja on Twitter. The real thing you should go check out is the YouTube channel as well. More long-form interviews for the Braves fans. Spencer Strider was up there recently. You will learn a ton about this dude, and it will help you watch him pitch with a more educated pitching mind. So, Rob, always great talking to you. Thanks for your support of both myself and of Vandy Baseball. And this was great. We will certainly have you on again soon.
Thanks, Max.
Rob Friedman's the Pitching Ninja. If you don't follow him, you either don't have a Twitter or don't like baseball. Follow him on Twitter if you don't. At Pitching Ninja. He's as good as it gets in terms of taking a sport to another level through social media. And he's gotten a lot of great recognition because of it. Check out his YouTube page as well. He has some great longer form interviews with top amateur and also a ton of big league pitchers. And I believe that is also how he makes some profit off of what he does as well, in addition to selling merch, which always sells out immediately, too. So thanks to Rob for joining me. He lives in Atlanta, so we're all kind of in Braves country here in Nashville. But the Pitching Ninja, a great baseball guest. We will take a break, come back with one of my favorites from ESPN Radio, who you hear quite frequently weeknights on this very station. Freddie Coleman, ESPN Radio host, is next on The Six. My name's Max Herz. You're listening to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville app. Welcome back to The Six here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. My name is Max Herz, taking you to Interview City this hour. How about four interviews in 1 hour of radio? Started off with Rob Friedman, the Pitching Ninja, one of the best baseball media members. I don't even know if we could call him a media member, but he's incredible at what he does. If you missed any of that interview or want to hear it again, go to the ESPN Nashville page on Apple Podcasts or other platforms to hear from the Ninja. We move on to another one of my favorites. Freddie Coleman is a national host for ESPN Radio. You hear him most weeknights between 8 and midnight here on 102.5 The Game when we aren't airing a Preds game or other local or national game broadcast type programming. He hosts Freddie and Fitzsimmons, which in my opinion is the best ESPN radio show, with Ian Fitzsimmons during that late night, weeknight time slot. And over the last couple of weeks, he's been filling in for a lot of his ESPN colleagues on some of their major TV shows and also some of the daytime radio shows, including their morning show, which you hear the first hour of here on 102.5 The Game from 5 to 6 as well. During one of those fill-ins last week, he was also on the air for a very viral NBA moment. Freddie, great to talk to you. Thanks so much for doing this.
Oh, my pleasure. Glad to do it, my friend. Been looking forward to it all day.
Let's go around the world of sports, as you always do on your show every night here on 102.5 The Game, and as you've been on basically every single talk show on ESPN over the last couple of weeks, as your colleagues have taken off. What's it like being on the big TV morning shows and every radio show over the course of like 9 days?
Yeah, it's been a blast, because anytime you get a chance to have those opportunities come your way, you don't turn them down. And even though our show does really well at night with what Ian Fitzsimmons and I do, when you get a chance to be a part of a different day part and talk to a different audience, you can't even imagine how much of that will draw people to your show. And even if you draw one more person to your show than before, that always is going to work well. So anytime an opportunity like that comes up, whether it's First Take, whether it's Keyshawn, Jaylen and Max, Canty and Carlin, Bart and Han, I'm always going to try to make sure I'm available and have a lot of fun doing what we do at night as well.
I saw earlier today you guys were lining all your producers and staffers up in nice suits for some sort of competition. How did that go, and what was that?
Well, put it this way. Jay Williams, he's the one that put it out there last night on Twitter on his handle that he is looking for a new executive assistant. And James Steele, who's producing today, he called me last night when me and my wife Denise were out driving around and said, this is what we're going to do. We're all going to show up in shirts and ties, but not let them know exactly what's going to happen. But the minute that the show kicks off at 6 a.m. Eastern time, we're going to apply for the job being the executive assistant and hand them the resumes. And it just kept getting funnier and funnier and funnier, because Jay Will played right into it. And he said, okay, and he started posting the resumes online, and people had a chance to see that. And they were doing different things. For example, Alan Yates was rubbing his shoulders throughout the show. James Steele, he comes in, he's fanning him. Pat Costello brought him coffee. It just got something that was very minute that he put on Twitter.
Oh my God.
One of the funniest things we've done and I've been a part of in a long, long time.
Well, wasn't one of their resume submissions that they secretly didn't like Duke, or they didn't like Coach K, and they didn't want Jay Will to know?
Well, no, it wasn't anything like that. Pat Costello put as part of his resume that he's going to bring the intensity to the job, just like Coach K did as the head coach at Duke.
It was pro Coach K.
Absolutely. Okay, it was definitely pro Coach K. And it showed a picture of Coach K where he's looking at the mean face and he's hunched over and egging his team on. And he used that as part of his resume.
Freddie Coleman is our guest from ESPN Radio. You hear his show most nights, 8 p.m. to midnight here on 102.5 The Game, but you won't today because he was up at 3 in the morning for the early show. So you mentioned your wife, Freddie, and I've always wanted to ask you this because, as you said, you pop on so many different shows. Your normal schedule is you host a show that goes till 1 a.m. in the time zone you live in the Eastern time zone. Does your wife know your schedule? Like, does she just expect you to never be home?
Well, I don't know about never being home, but I'm sure, believe me, I'm sure when I'm not home, she probably thinks, good, get him away from me. I need a break from this guy once in a while. But she is really, really good at making sure that when the schedule comes out and I have a chance to do that, that she has that as well. So she gets a pretty good idea of how she can change our schedule and make that work for us, whether it comes to dinner time or anything else that we're going to do. So she's really, really good at making sure that I'm on the right track, no matter what day part, what show that I have a chance to do, whether it's early in the morning or the regular that I usually do Monday through Friday with Ian Fitzsimmons from 9 p.m. to 1 a.m. Eastern time.
Okay, that's good to hear, because I'm in my 20s and very much unmarried, but also have a lot of night work and stuff like that, and it changes all the time. So you're my new marriage advice role model whenever I get there. So
the best thing about that is communication. I tell people all the time, if there's no communication, believe me, you're going to have a lot more problems than you could have ever imagined if you don't communicate with your partner.
You mentioned, Freddie, that one of the shows you were on over the last week was First Take, and you were sitting there at the desk when NBA reporter Brian Windhorst went on this now famous, I was about to say rant, but that is so not the right word. He kind of floated around all five corners of his brain while depicting a possible trade that pretty much came true. What was going through your head while you were sitting across the table?
He was really terrific, because we didn't know that he was going to do that, because he had pretty much made a Kevin Durant-centric that he asked for a trade from the Brooklyn Nets. But Wendy is so connected with so many different executives and players and coaches in the NBA that he has a great sense of what could potentially happen and why something jumps out that would have been completely, completely innocuous to everybody else. He was like, why would they make that trade? So the minute that way he set it up and he built the sense of urgency, he built the drama aspect, and he had me, Courtney, and Christine leaning in to what he was going to say. And then when he hit us with that, all of a sudden we were thinking, yeah, why would they do that? And mere hours later, that whole colossal trade happened where Rudy Gobert goes to Minnesota and 5 players and 4 draft picks go the other way to the Utah Jazz. That is one of those memes that will live on, that no matter what the situation is, you can use that meme, use that gift, and everybody will say, oh, yeah, and revert back to that day we were sitting at the desk when Brian Windhorst had that stage and completely delivered and knocked it out.
And is it good or bad that when I watched the clip for the first time, he was the only person even talking in the edited version of it I saw, but the first thing that went through my head is, oh, Freddie was hosting today because I saw you.
There's nothing wrong with that, because if you can bring that correlation, I'm not going to be mad at you when you do something like that. And that's the power of first take as well. I tell people all the time, I'm always amazed at the power of that program, whether Stephen A. Smith is on there or who he's debating with. Chris Russo does a great job being on each and every Wednesday. I'm always amazed at the power of that show and the reach that it has, that so many people will continue to talk about certain things that somebody mentioned, whether they agree or disagree with what they had to say. I'm always amazed by the tentacles that show continues to have each and every week.
That's a good way to describe it. We're talking to Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio, and I didn't even want this whole interview to be just about you, Freddie, and about your shows, but you do so much, you do it well, and you do it with a lot of interesting people. So I wanted to ask you about your regular nighttime co-host, Ian Fitzsimmons, on Freddie and Fitzsimmons, which we air here on 102.5 The Game when we're not playing a Preds game or something like that on weeknights. Right. And he's such a football guy. He's such a college football guy, and he's really, really good at the sideline reporting he does for ESPN Radio College Football, too. And his brother, Devin, was Vanderbilt's special teams coach for a few years. He's no longer here, but was here for a few years and was the special teams coach when Sarah Fuller joined the Vanderbilt football team and was responsible for teaching her how to kick a football. And you guys had him on, I believe, the week after she played in her first game, and it was a great interview.
Sure,
but the best part about that interview to me, and this is the perfect way to sum up Ian Fitzsimmons, who I've never met before, but he referred to his brother as Coach Fitz.
Mm-hmm.
He did not call him Devin, which is his first name. Mm-hmm. He is such a football guy that he called him Coach Fitz. Is this how he actually addresses his brother? Because I love it.
Oh, believe me. We've had a chance to have his brother on more than a couple of times, and he never addresses him by his first name. And a big part of that is that his mother will tell him that if you ever call your brother by his first name, you're interviewing him, there's going to be problems in the Fitzsimmons household. And it shows the love and respect that both have for each other's profession, because it can't be easy where you have one brother working in the media and another brother working in the coaching profession, especially when it comes to being a part of a National Football League team. So I'm sure they have interesting behind-the-scenes conversations that we'll never be party to, that they probably talk about when dealing with each other and crossing those kind of paths. But it's really cool that you have a chance to have a co-host like that, who has somebody working in a profession that we cover so much when it comes to football. And sometimes the best stories are the ones that never make the air, that some things that Devin will share and let us know. So it's always having a cool dynamic that those two really love and respect each other, that they don't mind sharing information, but they also know that the information that they share goes not beyond anybody in that room. That's a cool aspect of having somebody that I work with, having somebody that he's related to being a part of something like that in the NFL.
Freddie Coleman's our guest from ESPN Radio. You've also hosted many of those shows with our buddy Teron Davenport, who works out of this station quite a bit. I think the ESPN Radio assigners have done a really good job picking out fill-in hosts from the NFL Nation crew. And it's never just football with Teron and those other fill-in hosts, because they can talk about any sport. But what's it like for you to get to know Teron? And as you host these shows with him, you're not in the same place. You're at ESPN HQ. He's actually usually in the room I'm in right now here at ESPN Radio Nashville. What's it like getting to know him and the other NFL Nation reporters and going deep with them on their teams, but also talking other sports with them?
It has really been a wonderful blessing to see how they've continued to grow, because they've committed to radio, and it could have been very easy for them to say, yeah, I want to do radio and not put the time and work and effort into it. But they've all been able to do that, whether it's been him or Courtney Cronin or Amber Wilson. They don't just look at it as something that, yeah, it's fun and I don't have to do any homework. I don't have to do any preparation. They're always well prepared, and they're always willing to ask questions, and we're always there to make sure that if we don't have the answers to make them better, we're going to find somebody that's going to help them along that path. So it's been wonderful seeing Teron Davenport having a chance to get more and more of a sunshine that's going to surround his career, because he has great depth of knowledge, not just of the Tennessee Titans and also the NFL, but his college football expertise is really good, and his basketball expertise is really good, and he continues to learn about other things that he doesn't know, and he's willing to be a sponge when it comes to those things. So it's really cool to see somebody that when he first came on the scene and we had him filling in, and he even said, I'm going to struggle a little bit, but I'm going to continue to work at it. To see where he was then to where he is now, to use the cliche, it is literally night and day what he has been able to do.
Yeah.
And how he's not just a guy that does NFL Nation or a fill-in host. He's a reliable part of what we do in ESPN Radio, whether it's on the weekends we have a chance to do that, covering the Tennessee Titans with ESPN NFL Nation, or having a chance to fill in during the week, whether it's with me or Sarah Spain or anybody else.
Yeah, he's the best. We're lucky to have him on our station a ton, running his podcast out of here. You guys are lucky to have him too. And the thing I really want to do with Teron, and I've told him this, and we almost made it happen on a high school game last year, I want to do play-by-play with him doing color for some level of football game. That would be fun.
Oh, it would be a lot of fun, because both of you guys understand exactly what high school football means.
Yeah.
And not just in the state of Tennessee, but definitely the Nashville area, because that's become a pretty fertile ground when it comes to recruiting. So having a chance to potentially see future stars in college football, maybe the NFL, and being at the beginning of that, that would be a cool experience. You guys have a chance to do something like that, because I know you'd have a blast. You'd be good at it. And I have no doubt that Teron Davenport will follow your lead and be the same way.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And the Nashville area has boomed as a football prospect haven over the last 5-10 years, which has been cool to witness the most recent part of that firsthand. So, all right, we've talked about, I mean, every single niche of your job. We could go for hours on that, but you always have something to say. You and Ian do, or whoever else you guys are with, always kind of go around the whole sports world. I mean, you guys will cover all the big four in a night between 8 and midnight and do a great job of that. So the big story of the day, and you haven't been on air anywhere since this happened, and I assume you're not on the show tonight, so this is the first Freddie Coleman take on the Baker Mayfield to Carolina trade. You got any strong thoughts on it, Freddie?
Well, about time, number one, because you're the Carolina Panthers. You did the right thing by making sure that the majority of that contract was going to be paid by the Cleveland Browns, because there's no way you could make that work in what could potentially be Matt Rhule's last year and have Sam Darnold as your quarterback. That was not going to fly with your team, and that was not going to fly with your fan base. But now, in my opinion, you may have the most motivated quarterback in the National Football League with Baker Mayfield, the Carolina Panthers, because he wants to show people that he was worthy of being the overall number one draft pick by Cleveland. Number two, he wants to show the Cleveland Browns made a mistake by choosing the quote-unquote adult in the room when it comes to Deshaun Watson over him. And number three, he's playing for a payday. If this is the final year of his contract, he has a chance that if he goes out there in a division where he gets a chance to play Tom Brady twice a year at Tampa Bay this year, he gets a chance to play Jameis Winston and the New Orleans Saints twice this year, he gets a chance to go up against two other guys, one of the greatest quarterback in the history of the NFL, and another guy that made people believe that if he is right and ready coming off that injury last year, the Saints could be a really dangerous team that nobody's talking about in the NFC. You go out there and you raise your level individually and collectively the Carolina Panthers, and being better than Sam Darnold, maybe even being better than Deshaun Watson in Cleveland, all of a sudden you got something going on there where that next contract, you won't have to beg, borrow, and steal to have that happen if you're Baker Mayfield. So it's going to be very interesting how this is going to work, because Baker Mayfield wants to show everybody or somebody that the Cleveland Browns should not have given up on him, especially when last year he played injured and did not give up on that organization.
And give the schedule maker a raise, because somehow the schedule's already been out. It was made before all this, but their one meeting every 4 years will come on opening day of this year, the Panthers and the Browns. So that could be pretty nuts. I wish it was in Cleveland. It's in Charlotte, but still going to be a whole lot of fun. So, Freddie, thanks so much for doing this and talking about what you do. I know you have so many fans of this station who hear you every night, myself included, and many who hopefully have seen you for the first time over the last week. And if nothing else, enjoyed your role in the incredible Brian Windhorst meme, ramble, whatever. I still don't know what to call it, but I love it.
Put it this way, I tell people all the time, I'm just an average brother that got a blessed break, and as long as that blessing continues, I'm going to keep riding as long as I'm allowed to do something like that, because I know exactly how fortunate I am to be in that position.
The great Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio. Follow him on Twitter at Coleman ESPN. And if you listen to this radio station between 8 and midnight on most weeknights, again, a little different recently because he's been a summer fill-in for a lot of the folks on some of the midday or early day shows on TV and radio, but 8 to midnight here on 102.5 The Game in Nashville, Freddie Coleman and Ian Fitzsimmons are Freddie and Fitzsimmons, and every time they intro a new hour, they go 4 hours every night unless there's a game going on that overtakes them on ESPN Radio. But every time they start the show, Freddie says, the best show on your radio, Freddie and Fitzsimmons. And I do not disagree. I think it's my favorite national show, period. And I'm not a huge talk radio fan. That's why I'm doing interviews instead of having an opinion and other stuff during this hour. But Freddie is the best. It was great to have him on, and you will hear him on the station quite a bit. And also with our friend Teron Davenport, who fills in on national shows out of ESPN Nashville as well. We'll take a break, come back, and talk to another person who works here, actually. He's a producer with us currently. Scott Meyer was a long snapper, first for Alabama, where he was part of one of their national title teams as the starting long snapper, and then for Vanderbilt as a grad transfer for two seasons. Earlier this summer, Scott was at a rookie minicamp with the Arizona Cardinals. He's 2 years out of college, got a first-time call from an NFL camp. He was there, and we will talk to him about that. You're listening to The Six. My name's Max Herz. This is 102.5 and 106.3 The Game and The Game Nashville app.
A little less conversation.
Welcome back to The Six here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Max Herz with you on this extended edition of The Six as these interviews have gotten more fun. They've also gotten longer. So The Six, we're making a decision right now, is actually going to leak into The Seven tonight. We have approval from the suit on high Chase on Game. And he gave double secret approval because we're welcoming in another one of his proud producers here at 102.5 The Game. Scott Meyer is with us. Scott, thanks for doing this, man.
Thanks for having me.
And everyone's like, oh, God, like another producer just coming on to drivel and give opinions and talk about sports or whatever we attempt to do on this station. Scott was a long snapper, first for Alabama. He was the starting snapper on Bama's 2017 title team, then grad transferred to Vanderbilt, where he was the starting snapper for Vanderbilt in 2019 and 2020, and even a full year after being done with his college football time, he was invited to Arizona Cardinals rookie camp earlier this summer and was part of an NFL camp for the first time. So, Scott, I've been wanting to interview you for a while about that specifically. I interviewed you when you were playing at Vandy, but now you're working here at the station, and you're with the Cardinals, who secretly, not so secretly, but they're the only team I've ever bandwagoned in my life. Because I love Kyler Murray. So what was minicamp like with the Cards?
You know what? I love Kyler Murray too.
Did you tell him that?
Nah, I didn't get to see him.
He's not a rookie.
No, he didn't go to any of the voluntary stuff, so he wasn't around. But no, it was a great experience. I love being out there. The weather was great. The program is first class, and all the coaches were just really cool. So it was awesome.
So when was this? It was over a month ago now, right?
Right. It was 2 weeks after the draft happened, so mid-May.
Okay. Oh, so we're a month and a half, almost two full months past it at this point. So you were there with a whole group of rookies, everyone who had just been drafted, and undrafted free agents, and others like yourself who were just invited. So what's it like to be part of that almost third group there?
Yeah, it was kind of wild because it was a bunch of guys that were, you know, my age or a year younger, and they all just got out of college too. And so everybody's just, you know, fighting for a shot. And after not being around a team for a while, it was a little weird. And but I remembered kind of what it felt like to be back in the locker room, and you kind of just get those jitters, you know.
So you went to an NFL rookie minicamp as a long snapper. Were you the only long snapper there?
Yeah, I was. It was me, and there was one other punter, and that was it.
So there wasn't even a place kicker?
No.
A punter and a snapper?
No, they had a punter that was already signed. He's in his second year right now. He didn't play on a team last year. He got cut in the offseason, so he's eligible for rookie minicamp this year.
Who is it? Is it someone we would know from college football?
His name's Nolan Cooney. He made news. He had testicular cancer while he was in college. Yeah, and he has this whole foundation.
Where did he go to college?
Syracuse.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. I feel like I do remember that. I wouldn't have remembered his name, but I do remember the Syracuse part of it.
Right. So, and it's wild now because he played for the special teams coordinator that Vanderbilt has. So he kind of comes to visit
Justin
sometimes.
Lustig.
Yes.
Yeah.
Coach
okay.
Lustig.
That's awesome. So we're talking to Scott Meyer, who's a producer here at the station
former long snapper for Vandy and Bama, talking about his experience at Arizona Cardinals rookie minicamp as a long snapper a couple of months ago now. So you were there. There was a punter there. Did you just snap to him a million times?
Yeah, when we didn't have punt period, yeah, I did. Me and him kind of have always been around like punt systems, and a lot of these rookies haven't. So we kind of took control and helped run the punt groups and the punt periods.
So in something like that, are there a lot of dudes who are either playing on the line on either side of the punt or punt return, or are gunners that have never done that before and might have to do it in the NFL? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, there are definitely a lot, because a lot of colleges don't run a pro-style punt system, mm-hmm. but luckily I did in college. So it was a lot of helping out the guys who have never done it before, a lot of the draft picks, of the free agents, the guys trying to get signed. Everybody was learning.
And did they explain that to you before? Like, you might have to teach the other guys something?
No, they didn't. And then once you kind of realize that nobody else has done this before, I'm like, oh, this is okay. This is familiar.
So did you almost have to work up the courage to take charge of an NFL drill? Is that too strong of a way to word it?
Not really, because as a specialist, like, the punt period is like kind of our thing.
Okay.
Like, it's like kind of like if a quarterback were to tell, you know, an offensive lineman where to go. It's just, that's like their thing, that they, the only thing they focus on. So
what were you being evaluated on, I guess, is another big question.
I mean, everything from, you know, physical ability, snapping, blocking, to leadership, everything you did inside the organization, being on time.
Just, and this is all over a 3-day period?
Right.
Wow. Yeah.
So, wow.
So is the NF, are all the position coaches there, like the main position coaches? Is everybody there?
Yeah, whole staff was there.
So was whoever the Cardinals special teams coach is, was his full attention on you on that punter for 3 straight days?
Basically, yeah. And wow. So when everybody would be in meetings and we'd be done with our film, we'd kind of just talk and hang out and joke around.
And what did they tell you? How do they think you did?
I mean, I guess they thought I did well. You know, I wasn't signed or anything. They have a veteran who's been there for a while, but they told me that just stay in contact.
Yeah. So is it too much to assume that if their snapper gets hurt at some point, you would at least be brought in for a tryout with one or two others?
I mean, it might be too much to assume. I'm not sure.
Okay.
It's just it's one of those things that they might want a veteran if it's in the middle of the season. But the offseason is a time where they can mess around and test things out.
Did every single team NFL-wide bring in a snapper for minicamp? Do you have any idea of that?
No, there was probably, off the top of my head, maybe like 11 or 12 guys that went to minicamp.
You know that you're in the top 50 then. If there are 32 who are starters, and then somewhere between 10 and 15 who are getting that first invite?
I guess. I don't know. It's just, it's how it plays out.
Okay.
You know, the Cardinals might call maybe another snapper for a workout. It just,
but could it also work the other way, where another team who didn't have a snapper in the summer call the Cardinals and say, you guys had somebody, even though it was short, would you recommend this person for us to try them out?
Oh, yeah. Teams do that all the time. They recommend guys. We had this guy in. He did great for us. Just stuff like that.
It's so interesting. I mean, there's no backup for these positions.
No.
Like, there isn't a single team that will ever carry a backup specialist at any of the three spots.
No, there's probably only 6 or 7, maybe even less than that, teams that have more than one long snapper on the roster right now just for the offseason.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. We're talking to Scott Meyer, who's a producer here at 102.5 The Game, former long snapper for both Alabama and more recently Vanderbilt, which is how he got to Nashville. He's an Atlanta area native. I know you train a ton here in Nashville, and literally everywhere you turn here, there are NFL players in the offseason. So you've got a good snapping crew. Who coaches you, and how did you stay fresh in between your last game with Vandy in December 2020 and getting the call to, like you said, be in that environment for the first time here in May 2022?
Oh, yeah. There's a ton of specialists that live here. I mainly train with, his name's Matt Overton. He was the long snapper for the Chargers last year. Before that, he was with the Titans. And then we have four or five NFL punters around here, a couple kickers. So we all kind of just have a little group chat and we get together.
It's so funny because as I go around here and announce high school football at some of the schools, especially the private schools and some of the public schools in specific areas, it's like, oh, like, who's the former NFL kicker teaching special teams here? And like at Ravenwood, it was David Akers for a few years. At Lipscomb Academy, where I know you trained a lot, it was Phil Dawson the last few years. So it's unbelievable. I mean, this has become a melting pot. Like, Tight End University is the biggest example of that. Travis Kelce doesn't live here. I know George Kittle lives here, but it's Travis Kelce's event. And he chose to bring it here because he knows the NFL players will show up here. And that's how you get a dude like Zach Wilson, who doesn't live here, has no connections to the area, as far as I know, is throwing to the 20 best tight ends in football in Vanderbilt's practice field 2 weeks ago. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, and honestly, I think a lot of it has to do with Trent Dilfer at Lipscomb.
Yeah, He's
been so welcoming to all those NFL guys, Mike Chandler, MMA guy, just everybody. They'll have practice going on in any inch of the turf they're not using.
Does the MMA fighter train at the football facility?
Yeah, he'll train at Lipscomb Academy.
Wow.
Yeah, that's where he does his work in the weight room. But yeah, it was pretty cool.
That's unbelievable. I try to tell this to people whenever I talk to them about how crazy Lipscomb Academy football is, because it's a high school, and they're affiliated with a college. The college doesn't have a football team. The high school football team could probably beat a lot of college teams.
Yeah.
They are loaded.
Yeah, they had a college football game played between like Birmingham Southern.
Yeah, and Sewanee, I think.
Yeah,
right?
At their high school stadium, which is pretty wild.
Yeah, just because I think it was during COVID and the schools had a cancellation and needed to basically meet in the middle.
I guess. I have no idea.
I think that's what it was. But anyway, Lipscomb Academy's indoor half field, is it 50 yards in there?
It's about 40 or 50 40, 50.
So that was where Tua Tagovailoa had like his famous first scout session back after he got hurt at Bama, your former teammate, Tua. And I feel like that was the first time when it really hit me that like this is kind of the center of like the non-NFL football world where people will gather, kind of like how Vanderbilt has become that for baseball too. And it's because so many pro athletes and former pro athletes want to live here. So it's cool that you're in that. And honestly, like you said, Scott, it's so much connection based of like if a long snapper gets hurt, you might need somebody to recommend you and it's probably out of your hands. And the more people you overlap with, the more people are thinking of you. It's the same as any other job, right?
Yeah, it is. And it's crazy because it could take long snappers, you know, forever to get in. Like I was saying, I trained with Matt Overton. He was a 27-year-old rookie. It took him 6 years to get in.
Wow. Well, we kind of experienced the same thing, Vandy fans, with Andrew East. Because he was so good for Vandy, and he was on the great James Franklin teams, and it took him years of being in a preseason camp every single year and switching teams to finally get a chance to play first with the Raiders, I believe, and then with Washington for a little bit. And now he's done playing and famous for other things, but he kind of exemplified that life.
Yeah, he's the perfect example of that. There's so many guys that go through it, but he was probably the biggest one in the spotlight that, you know, that was the first time that anybody that wasn't a long snapper got to see it.
Wow. Yeah. Talking with Scott Meyer, former snapper for Alabama. He was the starting snapper as a redshirt freshman for the 2017 Crimson Tide title team. And more recently snapped for Vandy. He was an Arizona Cardinals rookie minicamp in May. Is there a chance you go back for preseason camp? Do you know yet?
I mean, there's a chance for everything, honestly, at this point. A lot of people to say that when you least expect it, that's when it happens. So I'm just trying to least expect everything.
Do you have any idea why the Cardinals picked you? Had you had previous contact with them at all?
Yeah, my special teams coordinator from Vanderbilt is with the Cardinals now.
Okay. And that's Devin Fitzsimmons?
Mm-hmm. Okay. And he recommended me to their special teams coordinator, and they got on board with it, and then the head coach got on board with it. And so that's
how it
took off.
So is he the assistant special teams coordinator with the Cardinals?
Yeah, okay. He is.
Okay. And you had a Vandy teammate there, too. Chris Pierce was there.
I had two Vandy teammates.
Oh.
Tay Daly also.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, Tay was there on a tryout basis, and he got signed as well.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Okay. Chris was an undrafted free agent with the contract. Is that the right way to say that? Chris Pierce?
Yeah, he's going in as a tight end.
Okay. Oh, that's good. So, Chris Pierce, for those who aren't Vandy fans, he was a big body receiver who really had a breakout season as a fifth-year senior, but he was always a receiver. And he kind of always thought, like, this guy is built like a tight end. So I'm glad it's working out that way. But he clearly was the the biggest prospect of you three going in there, but great for Tay, too, as a defensive back. Is he still playing safety?
Yes, he is. Okay. And he had a great camp and earned a contract after.
Wow. So that'll be a lot of fun. Like I said, I love the Arizona Cardinals. I said at the beginning of the interview, I saw Kyler Murray play baseball when he was still doing that, and it was kind of the last baseball he ever played, college summer league, and then he went back to Oklahoma a month or so later, and things started to happen that pointed him towards football, which was winning the Heisman Trophy. So I've always loved Kyler. I went to the game Cardinals-Titans last year, which I wish had been closer, but Kyler went crazy. So I'm glad I got to see them last year before they started to kind of let it slip a little bit towards the end. But like you said, it's a great organization. I think they're pretty forward-thinking, too, is the impression I get. So it's a cool place to be. And hey, you got a free weekend in Arizona. And
that's right.
They'll be back here too, right, for a week of practice?
Yeah, they'll be here.
They're a Titans dual practice team?
Yeah, they play preseason here, and they practice here all week. I was talking to the equipment guys. They said they're going to go visit the Vanderbilt equipment guys.
Nice.
So, yeah.
So that's like, this is in like 5-6 weeks at this point, NFL preseason. It's kind of soon.
Yeah. I mean, training camp starts in 3 weeks, so it's pretty crazy.
Wow. All right. Well, for those of you who don't know Scott Meyer, you do now. He's about to go produce the Nashville Sounds game, so enjoy that, Scott.
Thanks, Matt.
Go Sounds. Scott Meyer, snapper for Vandy and Bama, hoping to get into the NFL, and pretty awesome story. I also interviewed him during his time at Vanderbilt as well. That interview was on the Anchor Down podcast, so you can search that and scroll back in the Anchor Down podcast archives if you want to find that. It was in, you just told me what month it was, October 2020?
October 2020.
So scroll back a little bit there, and it was great catching up, and hopefully we will have more strides in the snapping career to talk about sometime soon. But it is an ultra-specific world within the most popular sport in the country.
It is.
It's cool. It's really cool. And we talked about this in the other interview, too. You never wanted to be an O-lineman.
No.
You just wanted to be a snapper.
Correct.
I feel like that's probably the number one question people have.
Yeah, well, I mean, I walk up and I'm 6'1", you know, and there's not a lot of O-linemen that are 6'1", so.
You can add some weight.
Yeah, like 80 pounds.
Well, this was fun. Scott, thanks for doing this, man.
Yeah, man, thanks for having me.
We'll take a break. The 6 has turned into the 7. We'll come back, and maybe even more obscure than long snapping, we will talk pro lacrosse with my buddy Drew Carter from ESPN. If you've seen the PLL on TV, we are going to go deep into the PLL. This is the 6, quickly turning into the 7. My name is Max Herz. You're listening to 102.5 and 106.3 The Game.
I think JT Giles Harris might have gotten hit right in the Minnesota Twins on this one.
Welcome back to the 6 here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are about to make history with the first ever Premier Lacrosse League radio segment anywhere in the state of Tennessee in recorded history. That very short but very funny call you just heard was from one of the rotating voices for ESPN's broadcast of the Premier Lacrosse League, which is pro outdoor summer lacrosse. He's Drew Carter. He works for ESPN and the ACC Network, and he joins us now from his lovely home in Connecticut. Drew, great to see you. A great line. Have you just been basking in the glory of that amazing pun as a guy got hit in the nuts with a lacrosse stick? He got hit in the Minnesota Twins during a match in Minneapolis.
Yeah, thanks, Max. That's probably one of the highlights of my career, at least in the last 5 years. Not the first time, though, that a call has generated social media traction of mine. As you'll remember, when we worked together in 2017 with the Chatham Anglers, our good friend, our dear friend, Casey Hamill, was the videographer, or the videographer, as he says, and he recorded an amazing catch where the guy caught the ball, flipped over the fence, and I happened to be doing play-by-play for that. That video blew up, not because of my call by any means, but it was on SportsCenter's Twitter and Instagram. So this is kind of a similar feeling, although I think it's more PG-13 than that one was.
Okay, so for those who don't know, which is none of you because this is a lacrosse segment in Nashville, Drew is from Minnesota. He doesn't live there now, but he's from there. That had to have been at least partially pre-planned, right? Got hit in the Minnesota Twins?
No, it wasn't, but I did have a lot of pre-planned Minnesota calls. Would you like to hear some of the lines I wrote down?
Sure. And wait, you didn't use any of them?
I've used a couple of them. At one point, I mentioned that Trevor Baptiste, the faceoff guy for the Atlas, who's like the best player in the league, was putting together the best athletic performance in this state since Adrian Peterson ran for 296 against the San Diego Chargers in 2007.
And these
I was at that game.
These games were on the Vikings practice field, right? The lacrosse games?
They were, yeah. So they're in Eagan, Minnesota, which is the Vikings' new practice facility as of a couple years ago. Great venue. A lot of the players and coaches were saying it was the best one on the circuit. So for those who don't know, the PLL is a rotating tour-based format. There are eight teams. They're not based in cities. You've got teams like Archer's Lacrosse Club, Redwoods Lacrosse Club. It's like a barnstorming model, and I think they want that to be temporary as far as I can tell. Paul Rabel, who's one of the best lacrosse players ever and a co-founder of this league, says within the next 5 to 10 years, they're planning to put these teams in cities. So Minneapolis, or Eagan to be specific, was the last stop before the All-Star break last weekend. And I got the chance to call those games, which is really cool because I'm from Minnesota, like you said. So I wrote down some lines going in. Cooked him like a Juicy Lucy / Tater Tot Hot Dish, two Minnesota delicacies. That was wetter than 10,000 lakes. This dude is colder than February in Minnesota. No caribou coffee needed. This matchup is highly caffeinated. I mean, I was ready to roll with a lot of these, the Minnesota Twins. The Twins thing came out of nowhere because Park was talking about what happened in the play. I wasn't listening because I knew JT Giles Harris got hit downstairs. So for the next like 20 seconds, I was thinking, what's a good Minnesota way I could reference his family jewels? And luckily I came up with that one in time for us to see the replay.
So my rebuttal to one of those is I think Little Yachty beat you on the cold like Minnesota thing, and he has slightly larger outreach. So that one you can't use. And the second I watched one quarter of that game. There are four games over 2 days. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
So 4 games over 2 days. I watched the fourth quarter of one game, and it was when that incredible moment happened. So I'm happy I did while you were announcing. But something else happened, too, in a similar area to Giles Harris getting hit in a bad place with a lacrosse stick. Do these guys not wear cups during these games? Honestly, serious question. They should, right?
They should. I actually don't know. And that's, you know, that's on me. I should have that piece of prep is the undercarriage protection these guys are wearing. I don't know. I do think the PLL could parlay this moment into a sponsorship for protection. Everything in that league is sponsored. It's kind of like the NFL, where it's like the official laundry detergent of the NFL. Like everything is sponsored. I'm sure the PLL could get an official cup of the PLL, and JT Giles Harris could be the first guy to use it.
So we're talking to Drew Carter, talking PLL Premier Lacrosse League. He announces the games on ESPN networks. There's an indoor lacrosse league. This is, I don't think, even the first iteration of a pro outdoor lacrosse league that Paul Rabel, who you mentioned earlier, has been a part of. How many years has this specific league been around? And I feel like it's already bigger than its predecessors. Is that fair to say? And if so, why do you think so?
100%. So Paul Rabel started the league when he was still playing. He's one of the best players ever. He played at Johns Hopkins, set a bunch of records. Then he played pro, and he played in the MLL, Major League Lacrosse, or Major Lacrosse League, whatever. It doesn't matter because it's now defunct. It was a PLL-MLL merger
so that
in 2020.
That was another full-field outdoor league.
Yeah.
Because I think a lot of people picture the indoor league like played with hockey boards.
Yes. So that's indoor box lacrosse. There's still a league called the NLL where indoor players play there. There's some slight overlap with the NLL season and the PLL season, which is why one reason why the Chaos, who are the reigning champs in the PLL and they started 0-4 this year, are considered the greatest 0-4 team in pro sports history because they didn't have any of their guys. They were still playing the NLL season.
Oh,
NLL season ended.
Okay.
So now the guys can come over to the PLL. There's been talk about those two leagues coming to an agreement so they don't have that happen again, where the NLL season ends maybe with a week or two for those guys to rest before they start their PLL season. But the PLL started in 2019, and it was co-founded by Paul and Mike Rabel. Paul, one of the best players ever. At the time, he was still playing in the MLL. And the whole idea behind the Premier Lacrosse League was to allow these guys to make professional lacrosse their full-time job. At that time, and still to an extent, it's not. Imagine LeBron James working on Wall Street in the NBA offseason because he doesn't get paid enough of a salary to make a full-time living. That's what we were talking about. Paul Rabil is the LeBron, basically, of lacrosse. And he said, this isn't right. Lacrosse is the oldest sport we have in America and really the world. It's called the Creators Games in some Native American cultures. It was here before any of us got to America. He said, this is the oldest and most traditional sport we have in this country. Why is it that there's not a viable professional alternative for these guys? So he set out to change that. And I think the reason it's more successful, Max, and you're right, it is already bigger than the MLL, is these guys are visionaries. I honestly believe that. Like, Paul and Mike Rabil look at things differently than most of us do. They just try creative things, and if it doesn't work, they move on to the next thing. Like, the salaries in this league aren't super high yet, but the players have equity. If you play enough, you have equity in the league.
That's great.
That's a great idea. That's just different. You know, NBA players sort of have that with a salary cap and, you know, basketball related income, but it's not direct equity in the league, which is what these players have. They're giving out NFTs for free. If you have one, you can vote in the All-Star game. However you feel about NFTs, I don't know anything about them, but it's like, seems like a good idea to me. You know, you try to be on the cutting edge of this stuff. And they're emphasizing social media as their main platform for how they're going to disseminate this stuff. It's, yes, they have a great ESPN TV deal, which is new this year. They had one with NBC Sports for the first 3 years of the league, but they emphasize social media because they just see where the world is going. And so the league is on the up and up, and I think the tour-based model has helped. They've been in hotbeds like Baltimore and Long Island and Albany. They're also going to places where it's not as big, like Seattle and Denver. I think Nashville could be a great spot on the tour eventually. You put it in that MLS stadium, that would be perfect. So the league is on the up and up. And for lacrosse fans like myself, it's really cool to see.
Well, we're in week 5 of 15 or so, going from June all the way through September. And the one stop in the South was Charlotte. I mean, they're in the South and they're really going everywhere. It's not just like the 5 stereotypical lacrosse places you would think of.
Right. And that's the thing, Max, is there aren't enough lacrosse hotbeds to fill a full summer schedule. So they kind of have to go to different places, but then it becomes the question, what's a good place to help grow the game? I think Minneapolis is a great example. Minneapolis is known as the state of hockey, but it's gorgeous in the summer. You get people who love lacrosse to maybe travel there, and you get some people in Minnesota who've never seen the sport to come out. That's a great way to grow this game. And I think another reason why the PLL has been successful so far is they're not just thinking about how to make the league successful. They're thinking about how to make the sport successful. Think about why the NFL and NBA and MLB are so big. It's not necessarily because we love the leagues. Nobody loves Rob Manfred, you know? Nobody loves the owner of their favorite NBA team. They love the sport. And how does that happen? Well, you watch it on SportsCenter growing up. When social media comes around, you start to follow it on there. You talk to your dad about it, that kind of stuff. And so I think the PLL is trying to emphasize that growth for the sport, not just the league, by going to places like out west and like Charlotte and not restricting themselves to a place where people already love the sport.
Talking to Drew Carter about Premier League Pro Lacrosse, the PLL, which you can watch on ESPN this summer. And like you said, Drew, it's a barnstorming league. It's 8 teams that travel to the same place every week, and they mix it up. Everybody plays everybody. Everybody plays one game, 2 nights of 2 games each. And the games you got to call Friday and Saturday last week in Minnesota, the total margin of victory in 4 games was 5 goals. Has the quality of play been this good the whole time?
It's awesome, Max. If you love lacrosse or if you love sports at all, I'm telling you got to watch it. These are the best players in the world, and it's really cool to think about a league that's only 4 years old immediately attracting the best talent in the world. That's, again, what we're talking about with these guys, Mike and Paul Rabil. They just know what they're doing here. They've already attracted the best players in the world, and again, I'll use a basketball analogy. Think about how high the quality of play would be if there were 8 NBA teams. Just imagine only the teams that make the conference semifinals are playing each other in the regular season.
And they're playing each other constantly, so they know everything about each other too.
Right. And you develop, everyone in the league is a rival because they all play each other 2 to 3 times a year if they meet in the playoffs. So that's what we're talking about here. The quality of play is off the charts. And I think there's so much opportunity for expansion in this league. At the moment, you know, I don't know if the money is there to expand this league and pay full-time staffers and players for a ninth or a tenth or whoever knows how many teams are going to be in the future. But man, because you only have eight teams and the best players in the world all want to play in this league, the quality of play is insane. That's how you end up with the defending champs starting 0-4 and being favored against a team with a win in week five. Like, it's just crazy. I haven't seen a single spread on one of these games, which, by the way, is another way the PLL has been innovative, embracing gambling, which, hello, why wouldn't everyone do that? And credit to ESPN for embracing it as well and putting it on the score bug and leaning into it, because that's a big reason why a lot of people watch sports. But if you look at the lines for these games, it's never more than a goal and a half favorite. And you just said it, five combined goal differential in four games. That doesn't happen in any other sport. But it happens in the PLL because you've got the best players in the world and only eight teams.
It really is amazing. And yeah, I think the ability to bet on it would attract people here where we're not getting the games in person. Lacrosse is a growing sport here as it is everywhere else in Nashville. We have a D1 women's lacrosse team in Vanderbilt. There are a lot of high schools that play it, both boys and girls high school lacrosse. So there's been a push for the High School State Association to formally take in lacrosse. So we will see if that happens sometime in the near future. But the team names are great. They're not associated with cities or anything. Archers, Redwoods, Atlas, Chrome, Chaos, Cannons, Whip Snakes, and Water Dogs. Who came up with these? And did you come up with any of them, Drew? I love these PLL team names.
No, I wish I could take credit for a couple of the names. Which one's your favorite, Max?
I think it's Whip Snakes.
Whip Snakes is good. Yeah.
I feel like it's
they're the cream of the crop.
It sounds like a lacrosse-y type of word. Like, I'd believe it if that was slang. Like, man, like you whipped snaked that into the top corner.
I buy it. Maybe we'll have to use that as a verb on one of the broadcasts this
Ooh.
Year. Water Dogs is a great example. They were the first expansion team, so they started with the original six and then added Water Dogs and Cannons over the last couple years. Water Dogs, like Paul Rabel has come out and said there were four finalists. I think the other ones were Grit, Stones, and Bolt. We're not talking about like the Tigers versus the Wildcats here. And this is another area where the PLL is trying to be innovative. The Water Dogs, I might be wrong here, but I'm pretty sure that was proposed for the first time on Pardon My Take, which is like the biggest sports podcast in the world over on Barstool. Rabel will go all there, he goes on there all the time. And Big Cat and PFT, the two hosts of that podcast, are like part owners of the Water Dogs. And so a huge portion of the audience for this league, I think, has come over from watching and listening to Pardon My Take and following those guys on social media. Again, not afraid to embrace the fact that that's where a lot of people get their news. The names are amazing. It's been weird for me because I don't know if they're supposed to be plural or singular.
Oh, yeah. No clue. Absolutely no clue.
Kind of a grammar nerd. And you sort of just have to go back and forth. It's like, well, I didn't really like how that sounded, so I'll try to fix it the next time. Like, Chrome is undefeated or Chrome are undefeated? What sounds right? Is it the Chrome or just Chrome? But it's cool because no one gets super, you know, anal about it. You can kind of just do it. Whatever.
One of them, the game I watched was Atlas versus Chrome, and one of them you were using like a cool secondary name.
The Bulls for Atlas.
Okay, so it's like the Constellation Atlas. Is that what that's from?
Okay.
I think
so. That must be, yeah. You just put those together for me. But their logo is the Bulls. They're the best transition team in the league, so the running of the Bulls writes itself. But I think it's kind of inspired by the Premier League in soccer. Like, Chelsea FC, I don't think, has an official nickname, but people call them the Blues, mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure. So a lot of what Premier Lacrosse League does, right down to the name of the league, is inspired by European soccer leagues. And those are the most popular clubs in the world.
Well, this is fun. Yeah, it sounds really well planned. And I mean, everything I've seen about it looks good. The broadcasts were great. The quality of play was really good. The game I was watching came right down to the end, as all of these did this weekend. So, I mean, at some point, somebody is going to get this right because the sport is so popular. So it seems like this is it. It really does. So I think Drew Carter put it all in perspective for us. Well, we got to get the boys to Nashville next year, or get a team once cities start gaining assigned teams. But I will say one more positive thing. You guys, or the league, you don't run the league, but you could. But you did something well that the USFL, I think, completely botched. If you're going to give the teams names of cities, you got to play at least one game in each of those cities. So I like that it's right. Just kind of words as you guys tour.
Yeah, they didn't try to fake it with the city and team names. I think the USFL kind of put the cart before the horse, or the cart before the Birmingham Stallion, if you will, by
hey,
giving those.
They got to play in their own city, so don't joke about them. They're the only ones.
Right. Right. They're the only ones for whom it actually made sense. But I think, you know, eventually, Max, these teams will be in cities, and hopefully by then the league will have expanded. Hopefully by then it will have taken even more of a hold than it already has. So this can be a true full-time job for these guys. But, you know, I know we're on a radio medium right now, so people can't see it. I just ask you to go look up some highlights of lacrosse if you've never seen it. I had never paid attention to it at all until I got to college when I went to Syracuse, and it's a huge sport in upstate New York. I didn't really have a choice but to learn about lacrosse, and I fell in love with it immediately. So if you just watch it, if you just give it a chance, I think you're going to love it. It's a great combination of basketball where it's 6v6 instead of 5v5. You beat your man, you draw a slide, and you try to beat the goalie after that. Hockey, it's live substitutions. The game goes up and down super fast. Soccer, it's a huge grass field. You're going to find something you like about your favorite sport in lacrosse. I guarantee it. And the PLL gives you better access than any league I've ever seen. We're under the helmet with the best players in the world every single game, multiple players on either team. And the personalities in this league are awesome. I guarantee you're going to find something you like if you check out PLL.
Wearing microphones, you mean, the players and coaches?
Yes.
That's awesome.
Every game. They're under the helmet, and it's awesome. You hear some great stuff. And we hear better stuff behind the scenes with stuff that gets left on the cutting room floor because it's pretty explicit, but the stuff that makes it to TV is still good.
Hey, half of the games are online only on ESPN+. Let it fly. Don't censor the boys.
I know. I don't know what the rules are for that, but I think because we're a Disney company, we probably have to play it safe.
All right. I guess that makes sense. Premier Lacrosse League, PLL, is what we've been talking. Drew Carter is our guest. He works for ESPN and announces a lot of the games. We are 5 weeks into the season, and they play pretty much every weekend between now and mid-September when the finals are, and about half of the matches are online only on ESPN+. The other half are on either ESPN, ESPN2, and it looks like one regular season game on ABC and then the championship on ABC. So if you have ESPN+, you can watch every game. You probably should have it already. There's a lot of stuff on there. But you will see a game at some point, whether you want to or not, and it's a fun time. So hopefully we can get in Nashville next year. It'd be a lot of fun. But Drew, thanks for giving us the intro and the scoop on the PLL.
Thank you, buddy. Go Anglers.
That's Drew Carter. You can follow him at Drewdle25 on Twitter for frequent or infrequent lacrosse updates. Drewdle25. His summer gig with ESPN is announcing the PLL, and he's on the ACC network quite a bit during the academic year and also filling in on their morning show, Packer and Durham, with our buddies Wes Durham and Mark Packer, both of whom we have had on the station here at 102.5. But PLL is a fun time. Like I said, I watched the fourth quarter of one of the games Drew announced. A guy got hit in the Minnesota Twins, as he said, and it was a good game that came down to the wire. It was well played. And even though there weren't a lot of goals going in when I was watching, it was still enjoyable because the defense was good and they play a 60-second shot clock, possession clock. So there is guaranteed to be a shot on goal at least every 60 seconds. And based on the approximately 10 minutes of gameplay that I watched, there's really a shot like every 20 to 30 seconds once they get set up on the offensive half of the field. And it doesn't really take them that long to do that, which is a good thing. So it's fun. I hope to see it in person at one point. I hope the league is adventurous enough to come to Nashville. They're going a lot of places. They're really going a lot of places, like Drew said. So I think it's a good idea. It obviously needs to stay profitable, but I think it's set up well to do that. And they have a partnership with ESPN, which certainly helps and I think is going to be a major key to them excelling. So look at your watch. It's no longer the 6 o'clock hour. The 6 has become the 7, but thanks to all four of our guests tonight, it was a lot of fun. My strategy for these interviews has been text fun people I either know or know of who are on the various sports beats that I follow or work on, and we got four fun ones tonight. So thanks to Rob Friedman, the pitching ninja, our first segment talking Major League and college baseball. Freddie Coleman from ESPN Radio, our second segment talking about his work at ESPN Radio, and a little Baker Mayfield too, and giving a shout out to our man Teron Davenport. Scott Meyer, who works here, he's producing the Sounds game right now. Switch over to 94.9 The Fan to listen to the Sounds game right now. They're playing in Columbus. Scott is producing the game. Jeff Hem is announcing it. But Scott was a long snapper for Bama and Vandy, who's getting a chance in NFL camp for the first time earlier this year with the Cardinals. So we talked to him about that. And then a little lax talk with Drew. So I'll be back Friday night at 6 for an episode that may be the hour it's supposed to be. It might also be longer. Who knows? But we're going to try and get some former Vandy athlete guests lined up. I think we got somebody that Scott may even know. My buddy Oren Burks, former Vandy linebacker, who is now in the San Francisco 49ers, and is also, if you're a Preds fan, a lifting buddy of Philip Forsberg. So you know we're going to ask him about that. But that'll be Friday night at 6. I'm just going to keep texting fun people and see who wants to come on. But you have been listening to the 6 turned into the 7 here on 102.5 and 106.3 The Game in the Game Nashville app. My name's Max Herz. If you want to hear any of those interviews again, go to the ESPN Nashville podcast page. Should be on any podcast platform you want. It's definitely on Apple Podcasts. Search ESPN Nashville, and these interviews will all be there. We'll take a commercial break. We'll come back. Our friends at ESPN Radio will take over for the night here on Nashville's Best Sports Talk, 102.5 The Game.